So anytime we see those four things happen, instead of saying, oh man, these people I work with are terrible, or instead of saying, I must be a bad leader, leaders need to learn to say, oh, the system is anxious, and then, you know, to adjust accordingly.
Welcome to the Kingsley Grant Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you become the leader everyone loves and wants to follow. Kingsley believes his leadership paradigm, emotelligence, the art of succeeding where others failed, is the key to achieving this status. On this show, Kingsley guides you through the uncharted waters of emotional intelligence and leadership essentials, with the guarantee that upon exit, you will become more skilled in relationship management, decision-making, and job performance. Now here's your host, your coach, and your Sherpa, Kingsley Grant.
Here we go, here we go, here we go. This is your boy, Kingsley Grant, behind the Jamaican microphone, bringing you yet another show. Today, I am coming to you from the Command Center of the Emotelligent Leadership Institute, where I am in an undisclosed location because I'm written into the vault of where I have stacks and stacks of the resources that I have, especially for you. They are selected. So today, I'm going to reach as right now into the vault. Okay, I've got it. Yeah, let me put that down here. All right, we've got it. We've got it. And so as you have heard a little bit of a tease at the very beginning of the episode, you know that we have something very special for you. Yes, I had placed it into the vault because I wanted to keep it secure, but it's going to be a different kind of a show today because I have a very special guest that will be joining me in a few seconds and will be sharing with you on this very topic, the one that you've come to hear more about. I was very fascinated in this discussion as our guest, Tricia Taylor, really went a bit deep. She allowed us, she kind of brought us behind, so to speak, the curtains and talk about what goes on in the area of the brain anxiety or the system anxiety as it relates to you and I as leaders. And I don't want to steal her thunder. I don't want to give anything more away. So we are going to, in a few seconds, let Tricia speak for herself. And boy, oh boy, I'm telling you, listen carefully. Don't be distracted and see and hear all the different things she has to share in this very special episode on the topic of how to calm your anxious brain and be confident in your leadership. You will also hear she use the term system anxiety and really all of those things. But, you know, as I mentioned before, let me step aside and let me let Tricia speak for herself and give you what it is you've come to hear. So without further ado, let me then introduce you to our guest today, Tricia Taylor. Our guest today is Tricia Taylor. Tricia joins me on the Kingsley Grant Show, where where leadership and emotional intelligence intersects, where we help leaders create environments that engages, motivates and inspires people to do great work at all levels. Let me give you a brief overview of Tricia. Tricia is an author, a consultant, a coach, and a therapist. She's the author also of two books, The Leader's Journey, which is coming out in a second edition in January from Baker Academic, and also another book called Learning Change. She works with leaders in congregations, nonprofits, and businesses. She's been married for 34 years, two grown children, In her free time, I'm not sure where she finds it, but in her free times, she loves to read and hang out with friends every chance she gets. Tricia, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you.
So, Tricia, how do you find time to do all the things as I hang out?
Yeah, I have this fantasy about, you know, being able to be in two places at once. And my husband just says to me, if you could be in two places at once, you'd just be mad you can't be in three places at once. So I haven't quite mastered that. But I get to have a really rich, full life. And that's what it looks like.
That's awesome. And that's really great. We're going to dive a little bit more into that a bit later. So one of the questions, Tricia, I ask all my guests in our first question is, when you hear the word leader and or leadership, what comes to your mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a couple of answers to that question. One is, I think, pretty standard, the ability to influence change or the ability to make things happen. I think those are good definitions. Going a little deeper for me, leadership means, I think, being able to manage oneself in a way that improves the functioning of an emotional system. So I know that sounds real technical, but basically I think leadership is just the ability to show up in a certain way that allows us to get certain outcomes in the systems that we're a part of.
You know, I like your answer because I think it really kind of contained the elements of where we're going to go in our show today. And so I appreciate you actually taking the time to do that. And so we're going to kind of unpack a little bit more about that. So you mentioned the idea of the leader being able to manage his or herself, which we talk about in the area of emotional intelligence. So when you think about that aspect of leadership, how do you define emotional intelligence and the ability to use those skill sets?
I'm perfectly happy to be able to rely on the work of Daniel Goleman and others to define emotional intelligence, the way that they do it in terms of thinking about, you know, being able to see yourself and then being able to manage yourself and then being able to see others and then being able to lead in relationships with others and all of the work that's gone with that, I really like. I add to that, mm-hmm. I think the concept of emotional maturity
from the work of
Bowen Family Systems Theory, other systems theorists. Adding to that, the idea of emotional maturity being the capacity to stay both defined and connected in an anxious system. And so The Leader's Journey, the book that I wrote with my colleagues, Robert Creech and Jim Harrington also being my business partner, we take the idea of some of the more complicated ideas in Bowen Family Systems Theory and try to make them accessible, you know, for the average reader. So that's basically what I would come down to is we have that kind of emotional maturity that includes emotional intelligence, but then goes beyond it.
Right.
So we're able to be defined as a self and at the same time be connected to other people in the midst of the system's anxiety.
When you mentioned about system anxiety, Tricia, kind of give us a little bit behind the scenes. What would that look like in a work setting where a leader is experiencing possibly system anxiety, right? Whether within the actual place itself, the environment, or within him or herself. What would that look like and how do you approach that?
That's such a good question. So I distinguish this kind of anxiety from something like a clinical diagnosis of anxiety. It's not the same. But one of the things that I say to people sometimes is think about when your system is vibrating and people instantly get what an anxious system is like. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as you say when your system is vibrating, people, I think, just intuitively understand. To take that a little further, the way that I see it is, and of course, this is not unique to me.
Right.
is that all of us have brains that are designed to make us anxious, and in a good way, because it helps us with survival, right? And so, you know, we see a rattlesnake, we get anxious. That's a yes. good thing. We switch automatically into fight or flight or freeze, et cetera.
Yeah.
But what happens is that we don't actually face those kinds of threats all that often. And the kinds of threats that most leaders today face is not in, you know, keeping our organizations literally alive, but threats in an emotional sense. We worry about, you know, do these people like me? Yeah. Am I emotionally safe? Is this a place where I feel comfortable? But our brains can't distinguish that kind of anxiety. And so it's our brains still switch us over into fight, flight, or freeze, right?
Yes.
So know that a system is anxious when we see essentially four things happen. When we see conflict on any level, and or distancing, and or a tendency for people to either overfunction or underfunction, kind of in an extreme way, and or when we see projection that usually looks like either blame or it looks like forming triangles, you know, looping other people into our drama or us getting involved in their drama. So anytime we see those four things happen, instead of saying, oh man, these people I work with are terrible, or instead of saying, I must be a bad leader, leaders need to learn to say, oh, the system is anxious, and you know, to adjust accordingly.
Do you find that some of the leaders who might be have a different style of leadership, for example, some are more assertive, you know, aggressive, some are non-confrontational. How does that play out in this style of leadership? Do you find that there's one that tend to manage those moments better than others?
That's a great question. Well, I think we learn our style in the families that we come from, just like we learn to manage threat in the families that we come from. And then we bring that into the system. I do believe we bring a style, but I also think that the system can change our style.
Ah.
We may show up one way in one of the systems we're a part of, say our family, and then we may show up differently, say in a workplace. And so as for what is most effective, I would say that if people can do, as Goleman says, if people can see themselves and see others, if they can define a self and stay connected, they might do that in a soft, collaborative way, or they may do that, you know, in maybe a stronger, you know, holding the flag kind of Braveheart kind of thing. But if they can do those things, then I think their leadership will be effective.
Which I think is a great, I like the way that you framed that, because I think you're right. It's the whole idea of adaptability, which is one of the competencies of emotional intelligence, and that person is demonstrating his or her competency in that one area. And I wonder then if, say, no matter the style of the leadership, if leaders have a stewardship mentality, that would that be something that would possibly somehow serve them, even though their style might be just different, just a different style of leadership?
I love that word, stewardship. You're talking about kind of the servant leader.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So what I think that does for a leader is that it turns down the volume on the anxiety. Right. If we if we feel like we're in leadership for our own survival, we are going to be so much more anxious and therefore so much more reactive than if we believe that we are in leadership to contribute to something that's important to us, or to help a group of people get the results, you know, that they really want. It turns down that fight, flight, or freeze, I think, and frees the leader to then think and to make thoughtful decisions, to make value-based decisions. And then, of course, Also, when we talk about being defined, that means being able to say, this is who I am, this is what I will or won't do. And a leader who is stewarding their role is going to answer those questions, I think, very differently than someone who's seeking status or power, someone who has their whole identity on the line. And then, so that's the defined side of things. And then on the connected side of things, you know, people don't typically want to follow someone who's building their own kingdom. Mm. People feel inspired when they're invited into the kind of leadership that says, here's this really great direction we can go, or here's this really great product we can make, or this great experience we can offer. Come be part of this. And so I think when that happens, the connection can be a really important part of the leadership.
You know, I like that. It's almost inviting. It's almost a, you know, we, and I love the word we, and instead of you do this. And I think, you know, I love the idea of defining and connecting those two really distinct words that I believe leaders, as you're listening today, I hope you're hearing those really very well chosen words, because I think it's one thing about the defining aspect, but the connecting aspect is so very important. And as you describe, Tricia, I wonder, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, it sounds like what a leader ought to do. How would he or she go about kind of creating that as an environment and, you know, making that where this is who we are? So it becomes almost an identity for that team he or she is leading. How would they kind of project that onto the team and create that within the system itself?
I think the starting place is when the leader defines themselves in a way that is clear and in a way that is compelling, and at the same time lets other people define themselves. Mm. Now, I think that the thing that leaders often struggle with when they're trying to shape a group identity, mm-hmm, is that either they won't define themselves clearly enough, and people just kind of wonder, what are you really about? Where are you taking us? What's going on here? Or they define themselves really clearly, but then the demand is that everyone else conform to that. Mm. I think that when we have a leader who defines themselves very clearly, this is where I'm going, this is what I'm working on, this is how I do things, and at the same time, I don't want to imply that it's just a free-for-all. Right. Obviously, the leader's voice matters,
right,
but there also has to be room for people then to take that vision and make it their own. Mm. And when that starts to happen, I think sometimes leaders get very insecure, and they try to impose an identity on the group rather than guiding the group to discover their identity, if that makes sense. I work with a lot of congregations. I personally am an ordained minister, and I work with a lot of congregations. And, in that setting, as well as businesses and nonprofit groups. And so for me, looking at the life of Jesus and seeing how clearly he said, hey, this is who I am and this is what I'm about, and at the same time, how often he asked questions and invited people to say, okay, so what are you about? What do you really want? What's going on in your head? And I just think that kind of leadership is so inspiring, so compelling.
And I think what I'm hearing you, even as you describe about even Jesus and his approach, is one that, as you're just, I'm listening, I'm hearing the word empowering. You know, it just empowers people. It kind of call out the best in them and believes in them and their potential that they have. So it sounds like that is what what tend to happen when he or she takes that approach.
I think so. So rather than being driven by anxiety, we're driven by a vision, and that is empowering.
Mm. You know, I really like that direction that you describe. And, you know, one of my contention, Tricia, you know, I wrote my book, The Emotelligent Leader, Succeed Where Others Fail and Become the Leader Everyone Loves and Wants to Follow. And I kind of made the case for what you're describing. And one of the things that, you know, the phrase, there is no I in team. And I understand where people get that from. I understand why that's there. And I hear that. But I kind of pull back on that. I'm thinking that what you were saying just now, it to me, it's like we recognize people's ability and their potential. And when you say there's no I in team, it's almost I'm hearing you have to conform. You have to become, you know, just I'm going to impose on what it should be. Shut down your I at the door and come in and join us and be a part of us. And my contention is, and this is probably radical and may not fit necessarily, you know, your narrative, but it's okay. But I think that the I in team ought to be there because you're simply saying, I recognize your potential. I recognize your skills that I recognize. And I want you to come and let us experience that. So I say, put the I back in team so that we can have not uniformity, but unity.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly right, I think. There was a systems thinker named Edwin Friedman, and he said, you know, when we really bring ourselves to something like this, sometimes the cultural narrative is that we're selfish, right? If we really show up as our,
yes,
our whole selves, that we're selfish. And mm-hmm. he said that was really unfortunate. And he coined the word selfie. He said, you know, instead
wow.
of selfish to yeah. be a self. Yes. And so if you bring yourself as yourself, you're not being selfish, you're being selfie.
I like that.
And you're free to, if you're selfish, you're not free to really connect with other people in an appropriate way. But if you are a clearly defined self, you can. Of course, now the word selfie means something completely different.
Yes.
This definition didn't catch on, but I like that idea. I think the idea that the I in team is saying, don't be selfish. And
right.
I would agree with that.
Right.
But what you're saying is, but bring yourself
yes.
to the team and let everyone else bring themselves to the team. And then let's see if we can form something greater than the sum of the parts.
Exactly. And that's the idea and the way I take it, because I believe that when that happens, then people are more authentic and they can bring their authentic self and feel as if I'm not being restricted from utilizing my skill sets and all the things that I've brought into my life over the years into this setting. So it's almost like it's not free for all. You know, one of the chapters I have in my book is leadership. You know, I have like seven essential traits. And one of those traits, of course, is leadership is stewardship. But the last one is leadership is directorship, meaning that leaders at some point have to make that tough decision and have to direct the ship, so to speak. And that is okay, but they've already built a relationship earlier on so that when they do that, people don't somehow push back and resist because they know the leader have their best interest at heart. And so leaders have to take the time to, it's almost like earn the right to do that where people are not going to resist and, you know, undermine what it is they're doing. Is that how you would see it as well?
I see it exactly that way. And then I would take it one more step. The idea that for the leader to exercise directorship in the context of the relationship, man, that's great. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, directorship just means dictatorship, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's authoritarian. And so, yes, yes, yes. And I also think systems just naturally push back. They just naturally mm-hmm. resist.
Mm-hmm.
And leaders need to both, I think, really work to value the relationships in such a way that people will trust them, that people will feel secure and so forth, but also to know that the pushback and the resistance doesn't mean the leader is doing the wrong thing, that sometimes it means the leader is doing exactly the right thing. Because systems just inherently resist.
And I think what leaders were, again, the self-awareness you discussed earlier, if they're self-aware and they're able to gauge a temperature and is that intuitive and they've trained themselves, they can somehow be able to pick up on that and then adapt and adjust accordingly and help the people to, as you described earlier about the maturity aspect of leadership. That is the part I think is so powerful here. And I wanted to ask this question here, Tricia, because I think you've just touched on something very important, even going back to Jesus and how he treated people and the idea of then mentorship. How does that fit into the definition or define and connect the idea of mentorship and then also leaders being able to sell the agenda, the vision of the organization. How does that those two kind of work together, or do they work together?
You know, that's something that I am just now starting to think about more. Mentorship and the idea that we're seeing more and more in the business world about sponsorship is really interesting to me. And that may be because I'm getting to an age where I'm thinking a lot more about generativity, you know, and reaching backward. Maybe that's it. But I think I might have a couple of things to say about that. One is that mentorship, in the context of being defined and connected, I think sometimes looks like apprenticeship.
Yes.
Which is a lost art.
Right? I love that word. Yes.
We don't have as much of that anymore. There was a time in our culture where if you wanted to learn a skill or a trade, what you even to be a doctor or a lawyer, you did was enter into an apprenticeship. And so the idea that if I can define myself and my own work with a mentee and then invite them to define themselves, the chances are that I'll have an influence over their self-definition, but I'm also giving them this amazing gift to be able to say, well, who am I? In other words, not how do I be more like Tricia, but how do I take some of what Tricia has given me and integrate that with my own self that Tricia is helping me discover? And so I think that's often how mentorship shows up in an emotionally mature relationship.
You know, I mean, you just captured so well. And I think, you know, the idea of apprenticeship and mentorship, I think is so powerfully, you know, combined. When you put those together, what can happen? Because I think you look at leaders, you know, throughout the times in the back, how they would take someone under their wing, so to speak, and pour into them. But I find some leaders might be a bit hesitant because you described earlier, they might feel insecure or intimidated. You know, I think the idea of what's the guy's name? Richard Branson. Richard Branson said, you know, train people in a way that they can leave, but treat them in such a way they want to stay. And some leaders are worried that if I pour myself into someone and mentor them and train them and all those different things, then they're gone. And then what do I have to show? So, and also some might be worried that what if that person becomes better and take their position? How would you speak to that kind of mentality?
Well, first of all, I would say that that's where the connection comes in. And I think that's what Branson is putting his finger on there, that if the connection is strong, that's a very powerful motivator for people. But in terms of the leader feeling insecure or intimidated, I would say that's a place where they can grow their own emotional maturity. You know, that's that when we see that in ourselves, that's an opportunity for us to work a little harder to get in touch with our core values, what really motivates us, you know, beneath our self-interest, what really motivates us about the work that we do, you know, other than just being able to be the boss or being able to be on top or make money. What are the things that really make us get up every day and do this? I know that Brené Brown recently in her book on leadership towards the very end, I almost missed it, about the importance of serving the work, that we don't just serve ourselves, but that we need to be doing work that is worthy of our service. And I think when we can tap into that, maybe some of the insecurity and some of the intimidation goes away. I know that in my own life, anytime I've surmounted my own feelings of insecurity or intimidation, it has usually been because there's something I want more, you know, than fear that drives my insecurity. There's something out there, usually related to some outcome that I want, that is more important than my fear. And so whether that's showing up in a mentor relationship or any place, I think when we see insecurity, that's an invitation for us to do more of our own work.
You know, do you find that sometimes possibly the insecurity, because it doesn't have to be all necessary causality, but where people who as leaders may have had some traumatic experiences, whether it's, you know, whatever that trauma might be. And so how does that kind of play out, even maybe not insecurity per se, but that impact that they've had through an experience? What does it look like, and how do you see that in leadership normally?
I think this is one of the exciting fields in our work now, is being able to see the impact of trauma on leadership. We know now that trauma is so much more prevalent than we ever really let ourselves believe before. And we know that trauma changes our brains. We know that we can become disordered as a result of trauma. That's what PTSD is. And also that we can experience growth as a result of trauma. And all of that, I think leaders do well to remember that, first of all, there's a really good chance that they themselves have experienced trauma, and that as a result of that trauma, they've learned to be a certain way in the world. You know, maybe they've learned to be, back to what we were saying earlier, maybe they've learned to be highly collaborative so as not to get anyone upset, or they've learned to be highly authoritarian so as, you know, to protect themselves from resistance or whatever. And so they need to look at the impact of trauma in their own lives, and then also just to remember, in any workplace of more than four people, there's almost a guarantee that you have at least one person who is a survivor of trauma. And that person brings both the wisdom that they have developed in learning to survive that, as well as maybe some of the reactivity of maybe growing up or experiencing a world that isn't safe. And leaders who are trauma-informed can just get themselves a basic education on how we learn to protect ourselves when we've been traumatized, and how those things show up in the workplace. And we look like, you know, we look at that person and we say, why is that person doing that? That makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
Until we think, I wonder if trauma might be a part of this. And that's none of our business. So we don't have to, you know, pry into their lives. But once we think, oh, you know, this actually is well explained by trauma, then maybe we can provide a different kind of workplace.
You know, I think that is really a very intuitive, very insightful, I should put, way of framing that. Because I think sometimes, going back to emotional intelligence, where the social awareness aspect of things, where that leader, the more he or she can become very socially aware and understand how to read people's emotions accurately and then to respond accordingly, that would help them, you know, to not only deal with their own issues, but also being able to detect and then follow through, of course, with some certain skills that leader would need to have to manage, because they're not the professional to somehow try to treat that person. You know, that's not the point. The point is their sensitivity would be heightened enough so that they can do, you know, somehow adjust around that. So, you know, Tricia, we could spend all day. This is such a fascinating topic, the way you're approaching it, the angle. I love the connected, the definite, defined in connection. I love the trauma aspect and bringing that awareness to our mind, because a lot of places we don't have this kind of stuff being brought up. And so there are things that goes undetected, but also as leaders, not informed well enough to be able to take a different approach to their people. So as we're going to wrap things up here, I want to ask this question. What's the one piece of advice you would give to business leaders or, you know, organizational leaders or even church leaders that would help them succeed where others fail and become the leader everyone loves and wants to follow?
There's just so much, isn't there?
I know. It's just, even one piece, just one small piece.
The piece of advice I would give to every leader is learn to listen. Oh. Learn to listen. Listen to yourself. Learn to listen to the people who are trying to give you feedback. Listen to the voices around you. I think that would be the bottom line. Learn to listen.
I love that. I love that. And what's the best way for people to know more about you and find out what it is you're doing and connect with you?
Yeah, you can find out about the work that my partner, Jim Harrington, and I do at theleadersjourney.us. That's where we are on the web. And then our podcast, which I think is where you
found
me, is The Leader's Journey on iTunes and all the places where you get your podcasts. It's just called The Leader's Journey. And then we're also at The Leader's Journey on Facebook. So you can hear the theme there. The work we do is called The Leader's Journey, and you can find us on all those platforms.
You know, I really want to recommend strongly, as you're listening, that this is a great podcast to listen to. It really is. It's the substance that you get. There's so much. It's not fluff. This is deep stuff, deep thinking. And I really appreciate the work that you and Jim do because I think it's really meaningful. It's needed. It's very much needed in the leadership community. So thank you for all the work that you guys do. And I want to recommend to you as my audience, please go and listen to their podcast, The Leader's Journey, because you are, like me, you will become a fan like myself. So I want to encourage you to do that. So Tricia, I want to say thank you so very much for taking the time to be with us here on the King's Grand Show and to deliver the goods as you've done.
My pleasure. This has been great to get to know you and to be with you today.
Thank you. And there you have it, my friend. I hope today, as you listened to Tricia and the different directions, the different things she downloaded and shared with us as leaders, I would think that this is one of those episodes you want to go back and listen to. Pause and really take in some things that she had to say, because it is so important that if you're going to lead confidently, if I am going to lead confidently, we've got to get this right. We've got to normalize, stabilize, get our anxiety under control. And she taught us, she shared with us how to do that. And then having the confidence to lead, because our people are looking to us to lead effectively, confidently. And I love the part she talked about where having a clear vision and being able to articulate that well for your people is one of the very important skills to get this anxiety under control. Actually, power through that, and people will applaud you and people will love you and become the leader. You will become the leader that everyone loves and wants to follow. Wow. Again, listen, re-listen. Share this with someone else so that they can also get what Tricia shared with us today. And my friend, I want to again encourage you, because you are one skill away from becoming that kind of leader everyone loves and wants to follow. One skill. And I hope today you're a bit closer to where you want to go through this episode. And please make sure that you somehow give Tricia a shout out at the links she provided, just to let her know how much you appreciated what she shared. Hit her up, listen to their podcast. And in some way, I would love to hear back from you of your thoughts, and let us have an ongoing conversation on this. With that said, my friend, peace out. God bless. And I'll see you on the flip side. Yeah.